is the Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. Dr. Mohler is president of the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary and one of the nation's leading theologians and cultural commentators. To get online with Dr. Mohler, call toll-free nationwide, 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Now, here's your host, Dr. Albert Mohler.
Hello, America. Welcome to the Albert Mohler Program. What we are seeing in America today is a very corrupted vision of masculinity. And now it's reaching the television screen, and there are programmers that are putting on shows with characters who represent the worst antisocial tendencies. And instead of becoming models of what young men should not be, they're becoming, models that many are seeking to emulate. That's what we're going to talk about today. We're going to talk about some of the characters on the show Lost on ABC, also some of the programming on Spike TV. The New York Times had a fascinating inside view of this in yesterday's paper, and we're going to be talking about it today. You can also get ready for that by looking at my commentary published today at my website at Albert Mohler, that's MOHLER.com. First, a review of issues in the news. California Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger, has denied clemency to Stanley Tukey Williams, whose bid to avoid execution after midnight tonight has gained worldwide attention. And Tukey Williams has become kind of a poster child against the death penalty. But I have to say, I think the governor's done the right thing here. Let's just review this case. This man, Tukey Williams, as he is known, was one of the founders of one of the most violent youth gangs in all of the United States, the Crips. It has led to many, many dozens of violent deaths. The most recent, a young boy who was killed because some gang members mistook him for someone else. Tukey Williams had founded this group. Not only did he found it, he was involved in their same activities. He was convicted of four homicides. Now, the claim has been made that Tukey Williams was somehow rehabilitated and reformed while in prison, and he wrote a children's book. He's become an anti-gang activist, and Hollywood celebrities and others have been lining up to argue that he should be given clemency. But one thing to notice here is that beyond all these claims of his rehabilitation, he has never admitted these murders, and he has never apologized for these crimes. Now, just in the last couple of days, the California Supreme Court turned down a last-minute appeal because having looked through the many appeals of this case and all the evidence, they were satisfied that there is no legal justification for a stay or for further appeals. Then the attention was immediately back on the governor's office in Sacramento, and Governor Schwarzenegger said that by 12 o'clock Pacific time today, he would announce his decision, and his office released a statement saying that there would be no clemency. Now, any way you look at it, Arnold Schwarzenegger, as the governor of California, was between a rock and a hard place here, just in terms of the political fallout. There are those who fear there will be violence in the streets of Los Angeles and elsewhere because of this. We'll just have to see. But this is another reminder to us that that this society includes within its millions some of the most violent characters imaginable. And this is a real test of whether or not we really mean what we say when we claim to be a people of justice. We're not perfect. No system of justice is perfect. But let's just review the facts that that this man has been convicted of his crimes years ago. There's no question about the violence of these crimes. There's no question about his contribution to the founding of the Crips gang. There's no question about his complicity in all of these crimes. The big question, we talked about this on the air last week, is whether or not we should consider that that one can somehow be rehabilitated or reformed in prison and thus escape the penalty of the law. That is not a superficial question. It's not a light question. It's a very serious question. It was faced by the people of California in this case and through their elected and appointed leaders in the Supreme Court and in the governor's office. And it'll be interesting to see what happens. If this execution goes forward, as is now expected, it will take place after 12 o'clock midnight Pacific time overnight. Other issues in the news, embryonic stem cells are back, and this in research from the University of Louisville, and I was proud to see this. A research team led by Dr. Marluz Rakijak, who's director of the stem cell biology program at the University of Louisville's James Graham Brown Cancer Center, has released a report at the 47th annual meeting of the American Society of Hematology in Atlanta, claiming that they have been able to entice stem cells taken from mice, these are adult stem cells, into acting like totipotent embryonic stem cells. Now, if this can be replicated in humans, this is undeniably undiluted good news. Why? Because this means that the human stem cell research could go forward with this kind of totipotent cell without any risk of moral danger and compromise by taking cells from human embryos of any sort. And this should be celebrated as good news. Now, one of the big questions when it comes down to the controversies over stem cell research is why so many of these researchers keep pressing the point that they just have to have the stem cells derived from human embryos. The point they make is that, or try to make, is that these are totipotent cells that can be transformed into virtually any kind of tissue or organ, whereas adult stem cells, they say, have been merely pluripotent, able to turn into many, but not all, forms of tissue and organ. If this research is sustained, it takes that argument away entirely. But there have been previous announcements that have given hope that adult stem cells could hold this kind of promise, and there's been resistance from much of the scientific community. It's as if something else is going on here other than dispassionate scientific research. But let's just note that the only truly applicable and promising therapies drawn from stem cells have been drawn from adult stem cells. And the most promising of those with what are known as autologous stem cells, that has to do with stem cells taken from the very patient himself or herself, that are then transformed into the cells that could heal the body. And this is an area of medical research that holds tremendous promise for curing injuries such as spinal injuries and for treatments for diseases such as Alzheimer's and Parkinson's and diabetes. I was talking to a reporter today who said that, you know, would you see this as good news? Would I see it as good news? I would see it as fantastic news. Folks, the conservative evangelical Christians are not opponents of stem cell research. We are avid proponents of stem cell research. We think it is a great thing. We share the hope that real cures and real treatments can be derived from this research, but only from those cells that are not morally compromised by requiring the death and destruction of a human embryo. So congratulations to Professor and Dr. Ratajak for this report. Let's hope that this leads to and leads soon to therapies and technologies that could involve humans as well. Christianity and science, it's a big issue. You know, the mythology out there is that with all the controversies over creation and intelligent design and all the rest, and yes, you could throw in embryonic stem cell research, that somehow Christianity is hostile to science. Nothing could be further from the truth. Baylor University professor Rodney Stark is out soon with his new book, How Christianity and Capitalism Led to Science. It's a very interesting work, and I think it's going to be an important work, much discussed, this book on the victory of reason. He says this: when Europeans first began to explore the globe, their greatest surprise was not the existence of the Western Hemisphere, but the extent of their own technological superiority over the rest of the world. Not only were the proud Maya, Aztec, Inca nations helpless in the face of European intruders, so were the fabled civilizations of the East. China, India, and Islamic nations were backward by comparison with 15th century Europe. How had that happened? Why was it that, although many civilizations had pursued alchemy, that is magic, the study led to chemistry only in Europe? Why was it that, for centuries, Europeans were the only ones possessed of eyeglasses, chimneys, reliable clocks, heavy cavalry, or a system of music notation? How had the nations that had arisen from the rubble of Rome so greatly surpassed the rest of the world? Well, he goes on to argue it's because of Christianity. The great historian of science, Herbert Butterfield, said that Christianity gave birth to modern science because Christianity believed, number one, that the world was real, avoiding the kind of hyper-Platonism that other cultures had embraced, or the kind of Eastern philosophies had embraced. And not only was the world real, but that it was important because the Creator had made it, and he had made it intelligible. That is, he had made it in such a way that we can understand it. We can look at the world and come to understand it. That is the very basis of observational science. Stark goes on to say, a series of developments in which reason won the day gave unique shape to Western culture and institutions, and the most important of those victories occurred within Christianity. While the other world religions emphasized mystery and intuition, Christianity alone embraced reason and logic as the primary guides to truth. Well, his new book is going to be coming out, and I look forward to seeing it, but he makes a very, very good point. Folks, there's a lot of discussion about Christmas. Some of you have heard, I know it's out there, that Christianity is based on Tannenbaum, an old German holiday, or a Norse holiday, or a pagan holiday. December 25th supposedly was a date derived from a pagan calendar. Well, don't believe it for a minute. Gene Edward Veith is out this week in World Magazine. He sets the record straight in a magazine in the December 10th issue, and he bases his research on an article that had appeared in Touchstone Magazine in December of 2003. What's the deal? Well, it turns out that December 25th was actually arrived at by early Christians who were trying to work backward in the church calendar from, well, from the resurrection of Christ. They were trying to figure all this out. They were trying to figure out how he could be 33 when all this happened. They were trying to come up with a date of his birth. And here's what's interesting. They came up with the date of his birth as 9 months after they figured out the date of Christ's conception. It says something about the pro-life understanding of the early church as well. Well, here's the deal. We're not sure that the date is exactly right, but the argument that it was come up with because it was a pagan holiday celebration already, we know that's wrong. We'll be right back to talk about corrupted masculinity in the modern age. This is the Albert Mohler Program. Welcome back to the Albert Mohler Program. What is happening among young males in this culture? You go to the shopping mall, you go to a sporting event, you just look around, and you'll see that there are a lot of young males that are taking on, well, the look of role models they're getting somewhere. They're finding these role models somewhere. And you just look over recent American culture, a lot of these role models have come out of sports and athletics. They've come out in times past out of the military and great figures of history. But right now, one of the major sources of role models for young men in this country is television. The New York Times is out yesterday with a fascinating front page of the style section story entitled What Men Want, Neanderthal TV. And when it's talking about men here, it's talking mostly about young men, and in particular, 18 to 30-year-olds. And by the way, the reason television takes them so seriously is because they are the primary audience market for advertising. They're the guys who are deciding what beverage to buy, what kind of electronic gadget they have to have, and what kind of food they like, and all the rest. And it's just the same way in Hollywood. If you can get 18 to 30-year-old men into the theater, they're going to be in there with girls or wives or someone. But it doesn't work the other way. And so this audience demographic, as it is coldly known in the TV world, is of optimum interest. Now, Warren St. John has written this article, and I think he's really onto something. That's why I wrote about it and took off from it in my commentary published today at albertmohler.com, because I think that nothing is more important in terms of the future of civilization than the expectations and behavior and responsibilities that are undertaken by young males. I mean, one of the chief responsibilities of civilization is to channel the energies and the influence of young males into constructive directions. A society that doesn't do that ends up with war on the streets, with the breakdown of the family, and well, with all the kinds of things that happen with what is now rather chillingly simply referred to as antisocial behavior. But Warren St. John goes on talking about series on television directed to young men, such as the ABC series Lost, such as series on Spike TV, programs known as Prison Break and The Shield. These are directed towards these young men. He begins by saying there was a heart-wrenching moment at the end of last season's final episode of the ABC series Lost when a character named Michael tries to find his kidnapped son. Michael lives for his child. Like the rest of the characters in Lost, the two of them are trapped on a tropical island after surviving a plane crash. When word of Michael's desperate mission reaches Sawyer, this is another character, a booze-hoarding, hard-shelled narcissist who in the past killed an innocent man, his reaction is not what you would call sympathetic. Quote, it's every man for himself, Sawyer snarls. Now here's the point St. John's making. He says, not so long ago, Sawyer's callousness would have made him a villain. But on Lost, he is sympathetic, a man whose penchant for dispensing Darwinian truths over kindnesses drives not only the action, but the show's underlying theme that in the social chaos of the modern world, the only sensible reflex is self-interest. The other characters presented here are Gregory House, a Vicodin-popping physician on Fox's show House, Michael Scofield on Prison Break, who is out to help his brother escape from jail, and Vic Mackey, played by Michael Chiklis on The Shield, a tough guy cop who won't hesitate to beat a suspect senseless. Brent Hoff, age 36, who's a fan of Lost, speaks of this whole television category and says, life is hard. Men gotta do what men gotta do, and if some people have to die in the process, so be it. He speaks of the character Sawyer on Lost and says that this man is fundamentally good even if he does bad things. And Mr. Hoff, he's 36, he's a little older than some of the young men targeted by these advertisers, but held to be a model nonetheless, he says that if you see these people do these things, it makes you feel less guilty about yourself. And that's really the point Warren St. John is making in this article. He really goes at some of these young men who say, I want to be like this person, and if I don't want to do all the bad things he does, well, let's just take another one here. This young man named Mr. Randall, he said, we're supposed to be sensitive and evolved and yet still in touch with our Neanderthal animalistic macho side. Watching a deeply flawed male character who nevertheless prevails makes men feel better about their own flaws and internal conflicts. Now, this is exactly what he said. Listen, he said, you think it's okay to go to a strip club and have a couple of beers with your buddies and still go home to your wife and baby and live with yourself. Now, Daniel Patrick Moynihan, the late United States senator, years ago talked about one of the dangerous tendencies in our culture as defining deviancy down. In other words, you just take behaviors and you start defining the level of deviancy, moving it so low that, well, it just takes a lot harder work to actually be considered deviant. And Moynihan says, you do that, and before long, nothing is deviant. That's the real problem I see with this kind of programming. And with the fact that there are evidently millions of young men and teenage boys who are seeing this and saying, hey, I can be like that guy. I can be just as ruthless. You know, instead of looking at this the way that villains used to be presented on television as models to be avoided, they're saying, hey, I can do that. I'd like to emulate that. Now, one of the men who is behind all of this, Mr. Liguori, Peter Liguori, he's the creator of the FX shows The Shield. And over there, he's now the president of Fox Entertainment. He said this, everything is about aspiring to perfection on their shows. Today, I think we thoroughly recognize our flaws and are honest about them. True heroism is in overcoming those flaws. In other words, they're not saying you should aspire to be too good or too noble, because men aren't going to do that anyway. So simply address the aim lower and let's be honest about the flaws and we'll see about getting there. He goes on and says also that here's a statement about the show at FX in which Vic Mackey on The Shield basically shot a fellow cop he knew to be crooked in the face. Quote, there was a great debate at FX about how the audience would react. I thought 50% would say it's the most horrible thing and 50% would say he was a rat. However, the episode went out of the ceiling in terms of ratings, won an Emmy. And he said, the ability to let the audience make the judgment was my aha moment. Listen to this. I think that moral ambiguity is highly involving for an audience. Now that is a chilling statement. The president of Fox TV says that moral ambiguity is involving for an audience. He went on to say, audiences, I believe, relate to characters they share the same flaws with. Well, I hope not. Are we to believe that Fox Entertainment, Mr. Peter Liguori, are now intentionally directing the programming of his network towards an audience of young males who share the same flaws as the violent, perverse, and antisocial characters he so willingly presents on the screen? And here's my argument. We're now witnessing the corruption of the masculine ideal into absolute violence and amorality. This phenomenon hasn't just started. It's developed over time as manhood and the role of men in the home and in the society have been undermined by social, legal, economic, and ideological forces. But what do you think? Do you watch these programs? What do you think about these characters? What do you think about these young men who are saying, look, I'd like to be like these guys. I don't have to aim too high in terms of my moral aspiration. I can look at these guys and say, well, I'm not too bad. And as this one guy said, I can go to a strip club and have a few beers and then go home to my wife and child. And I don't feel guilty about it because, well, I don't do all those awful things these guys do. But I do enjoy watching them do these awful things. You know, one of the other statements in this article that was truly frightening is one of these young guys speaking about a character who had committed cold-blooded murder said, well, you know, we're not defined just by one bad act. Well, I don't think that's true. Not an act like that. I mean, how do you just move on from murder? The phone number is 877-893-8255, 877-893-TALK. You know, we are told that entertainment is the mirror of our culture. If that's true, we need to look in the mirror and see exactly who we are becoming as a people. The phone number, 877-893-8255, 877-893-TALK. If you watch these programs and you know about it, I want to hear from you. I'm Albert Mohler.
Listening to the Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. To get online, call toll-free 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Or go to www.albertmohler.com. Here again is your host, Dr. Albert Mohler.
Well, folks, we had a lively discussion. I was talking with my interns and producers and others of the program. We were just talking about it. And, I mean, I got these young guys in the office, and some of them have seen some of these programs. I really have not given any time to this. I'm giving time to the topic, to the issue. And I want to know what you think of them. What is really going on here? I am concerned when the New York Times, of all places, after all, this is not coming from some Christian organization sending out a mimeograph form saying, alert, alert, we have a problem. This is the New York Times saying, we have a problem. And so if the New York Times sees a problem with this, then I think we had better look very closely. Now, some of you are watching these programs on Spike TV. You're seeing The Shield and many, many more watching ABC's series The Lost, or it's just Lost, excuse me. You know, that's what we're really going to, yeah, The Lost would be a Christian program about evangelism, right? No, this is ABC's series Lost. But what's happening in terms of the view of masculinity that is being presented on these programs? The phone number, 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. Let's go to Mike calling from Louisville, listening on WFIA. Mike, do you see these?
Yes, I do, actually. I watch several of these programs, including shows like The Sopranos. And I have to agree that while it may or may not be right, it is sort of intriguing to watch characters in a moral struggle, because it's easy to relate to people in a moral struggle, perhaps not as sensationalized as it is on TV, but I guess the reason for my call is in regards to a comment that you made right before the break, where you said that we can be defined, or you feel like we can be defined by one act, murder, for instance. How does that apply to the teachings of Jesus to sinners about leaving behind their sins and moving forward? And how are we to take that in regards to interpreting, should we move forward if we commit some egregious sin, are we at that point unsavable? Because I think the piece that people are interested in these shows is watching people go through terrible times and deal with their, or watching these fictional characters deal with their morality issues the same way that we do.
Yeah, and Mike, hang on here with me if you can. You know, I'm intrigued by that question. I would say, first of all, that there is no sin that cannot be forgiven. The Bible gives a warning of only one sin that cannot be forgiven, and that is blasphemy against the Holy Spirit, which is indeed resisting repentance and redemption. I mean, so that's it, resisting Christ. So there's no sin in terms of murder or rape or anything you can come up with that the blood of Christ cannot cover. But the interesting thing to me about this programming is that these men aren't really looking for redemption, are they? I mean, you're watching it far more than I am, but Mike, isn't that fair to say that these guys aren't looking for redemption? It's more or less, this is who I am, just take me?
I don't know if that's necessarily the case. Probably the most common show that I would be watching would be The Sopranos, and while the characters are certainly not looking for any biblical type of redemption, they are certainly looking for a redirection to a better moral code and sort of feel sucked back into amorality or immorality without any assistance.
Okay, Mike, let me ask you an honest question. What's going through your mind and heart as you watch The Sopranos? Is that doing a good thing for you?
You know, honestly, as I watch it, I often sort of compare it to experiences that I've been through. And like I say, although things that I've been through are not even close to as sensational as the sort of experiences that these characters go through, it's kind of a sounding board, I guess, to see the potential for, you know, what could happen to certain people in certain situations if they weren't aware of the kinds of things that we as Christians are aware of.
Okay, well, Mike, I appreciate your call. To join the conversation, call 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. I think Mike's kind of smoked out a number of very interesting issues here. let me say, first of all, that I would not watch most of these shows, period, because I just don't think there's any morally good thing that's likely to come out of it. And I don't have HBO. We don't have HBO in our home and The Sopranos and all that. But I don't want to send the wrong signal here. I think much of literature is filled with this same theme. You just take Les Misérables by Victor Hugo, and you just take Jean Valjean as a character. I mean, here you have someone who's been involved in awful things, but clearly he becomes a hero through genuinely heroic and non-self-serving acts. He's transformed, even in the midst of this massive novel and very important story, by the fact that he is transformed by moving outside of himself, and what he moves out of is this kind of antisocial behavior, and he does take on a heroic shape. That's just not what I think we're seeing in this programming, and when young men see this as their model, I think that's the big problem. The phone number 877-893-8255, and we'll be right back. You know, out there, young people are looking for models all over the place. They generally won't tell you that, but that's what's going on. They're kind of shopping for futures. I mean, that's what they're doing. They're kind of looking and saying, hey, I could be like that guy. Young boys, young men are saying, I could be like that guy. I could be like this guy. And, you know, what society has generally done in the past is it has worked hard to put up the kind of models that you would hope that young males would want to emulate. You know, you just go back to the 20th century. I mean, there were all kinds of bad guys during the gangster age. There were kids that might play the role of the gangsters or playing cops and robbers out in the backyard, but they really didn't want to grow up to be a gangster. Or if they did, you knew you had a big problem. You wanted them to want to grow up to be the policeman, not the gangster. And, then you had the G.I. Joe generation where little boys wanted to grow up to be soldiers. And then, always athletes and sports figures have factored in this as well. Maybe even some entertainment figures from time to time. But something new under the sun has really come about. And some would argue this is just the devolution of television as a medium. You know, actually, some of the people we were talking about on this this article in the New York Times suggested this is a good thing. As a matter of fact, one man, this is Robert Thompson, who's director of the Center for the Study of Popular Television at Syracuse University, said this: these kinds of characters, these antisocial males, are so satisfying to male viewers because culture has told them to be powerful and effective and to get things done, and at the same time, they're living, operating, and working in places that are constantly defying that. Well, I mean, that's just hogwash. That's like the man in the gray flannel suit from 1956, just updated. You know, it's the company. It's having to live in a society that represses them, makes them wear suits and ties, as if, by the way, that happens very much anymore, that's what's fueling male rage. But then he goes on the end and he says, a more likely interpretation may be that they, that is these young men watching these programs, represent an improvement in the sophistication and complexity of television. The young male taste demographic has pretty good taste. Well, what he celebrates, I find to be a development of real concern. I want to know what you think about it. The phone number is 877-893-8255. What's happening to male role models? What is the influence of these television programs, Lost, Spike TVs, The Shield, and others? 877-893-TALK. Let's go to New Albany, Indiana, where Teresa's on the line. Teresa, what do you think?
I think it's very scary. We watched War of the Worlds this weekend, and the major hero in that shot a man because he was being too noisy and thought the enemy might get him, a guy that had helped him out. And we watched two other movies this weekend where the female heroine, in the end, beat the bad guy, but she took the money that had been embezzled. I mean, there were no moral to these movies at all.
Well, I mean, I guess that's Hollywood, isn't it, Teresa? It's very interesting. I mean, that's not the only thing Hollywood's putting out. Let me say, go see The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe. The good guys win, especially Aslan the Lion, but that's a commercial for a different point here. We're talking about the demographic here that's looking at these violent programs where antisocial characters are presented as characters, if not to be admired, then potentially to be emulated. Teresa, thanks so much for your call. Let's go to Savannah, Georgia, where Chuck's on the line, listening on XM Satellite Radio. Chuck, you're up.
Hey, yeah, hi. You know, I want to also bring up the fact that in older movies, the good people always won. There were the old Jimmy Cagney gangster movies and stuff, where in the end, evil always lost to good. righteousness always won over unrighteousness. But, you know, then we had an era of television in the 70s where all of a sudden morality became real cloudy. I was telling your call screener about the one Norman Lear show I recall where Maude was telling her, actually Adrienne Barbeau, I don't remember the actress, but boy, getting an abortion was like going to the dentist. And then you had, you know, you have all kinds of shows where morality is clouded. And now, like you say, we have shows where regularly evil either triumphs or there's a standoff between evil and good.
Yeah.
You have shows where men are totally emasculated, and you know, and women more or less dominate, and are then women are literally vicious on some of these shows, and it's such a far cry, you know, because television can be an instrument for good, it can be, but right now it's not. Also, I want to say it's been a pleasure listening to you. I listen to your show frequently on the road. And I just want to tell you how edifying I think it is.
Well, Chuck, thank you for that word. I really appreciate your call. You made several good points in the context of this. And one of the things I appreciate is that you pointed to the fact that there are deeper historical roots to this. And you went back to the 70s and the sitcoms then. You know, in Hollywood, it was very much the same thing in terms of the cinema, where you had The Deer Hunter and Apocalypse Now and a lot of movies that really celebrated moral ambiguity. But, you know, those are presented in the context of war, both The Deer Hunter and Apocalypse Now. And I think what makes these current programs different is that these are applied to more everyday life. And I do find that more threatening. Chuck, we appreciate your call. We're going to go to Bill calling from Detroit, Michigan, listening on XM. Bill, your turn.
Yeah, Dr. Mueller. I deal with the youth at our church, and I see every day that when I'm with you, and even in my own kids, that they cannot separate reality from what's on these movies a lot of times. And they see what's on these movies as being something real that they can live out almost.
Hey, Bill, let me ask you a question. And you've got some deep-rooted expertise working with the youth in the local church. Where are the teenage boys and the young guys, where are they getting their role models?
Well, I listen to the program. I really think they're getting it from the movies. They're getting it from things, not only the movies, but the things they see on TV, you know, with all this Tukey Williams stuff going on right now. And, you know, well, what's wrong, Dad, with him being, his sentence being, you know,
commuted,
done away with?
Yeah.
And it's just, you can't explain to these kids because they're not taught in school really right from wrong. They're just taught how to pass a test, and it goes on, and then mom and dad doesn't want to get involved.
Yeah, well, I tell you what, Bill, I think you're on to the bigger problem right there, is that they're not being taught at home. And, you know, God bless you for the work you're doing with them at the church. You stay there and give them the right kind of role model that they would that they'd want to emulate. Thanks for your call. Let's go to David listening on WFIA. David, real quick. So quick, it's already over. All right, David, we lost him on that call. Let's go to Kevin real quickly. Go ahead, Kevin.
Hey, Dr. Mueller, I just wanted to comment on the show Lost. There's a character that seemed to be overlooked, and I think he's a positive model, and that is Jack, the doctor, who's kind of like the moral opposite of Sawyer in so many ways. And it's a running joke with my wife, and she always likes Sawyer. It's how women always are attracted to the bad guy, and Jack's actually a real hero there. And I think that's for people that are thinking about this and thinking through it, Jack's a good character to watch on that show.
All right. Well, Kevin, you know, one of my interns is thumbs up on your statement. And, you know, I found the statement about your wife very interesting. She may admire Sawyer, but she married you. And so that's good news. All right. We'll be back with some final thoughts. I'm Albert Mueller. Welcome back to the Albert Mueller Program. This has been an interesting discussion about what's going on in, well, what the New York Times calls Neanderthal TV. And something new is going on here. You know, one question to ask is whether or not there really is anything new, because after all, there have been villains and evil characters presented in the media, television, Hollywood for a long time. The difference is, this is what's new. These characters are being presented in ways that are, according to the producers of this very programming, morally ambiguous. And the moral ambiguity is the problem. And what's interesting is that these young men who are watching the program say right up front that the moral ambiguity of these characters gives them a kind of self-permission to go break the rules, to define their own moral code. Now, in my article that was published today at albertmuller.com, I said we're really going between the themes of rampage and relativism. What's the rampage? It is this male rage. It is this violent behavior. It's the very murder and antisocial behavior that is being talked about here. I began my commentary by talking about the novel Fight Club and the movie made from the novel. I haven't seen the movie. I have seen the novel, in which one of the lead characters, Tyler Durden, and remember this is about young males who work out their aggression by beating each other up. He says that we're the lost generation, the missing generation. And he goes on and says, we are a generation of men raised by women, as if to argue that feminism, having basically corrupted the knowledge of masculinity, the true knowledge of what a man is supposed to be, having treated men only as a problem and masculinity only as a disease, has produced a generation of young men who basically worked this out in violence. And we know that that has truth in it. You just look across this society and look at the crime statistics. You look at the antisocial behaviors. And there's obviously something very much to that argument. And then if rampage is the one side of it, relativism is the other. These guys who say, look, this moral ambiguity gives me room, license, permission to define my own moral code. You know, the last thing we need to tell young men is that they should define their own moral code. I mean, that is a recipe for social disaster and for individual disaster. This is simply not good. This is the very kind of message that healthy societies resist. They identify such messages as being dangerous and counterproductive and simply wrong. But in the kind of moral relativism that we now see ensconced in this society, you really find very few willing to say that almost anything is wrong. And when Hollywood, both on the big screen and in television, starts presenting models of moral ambiguity as the norm, well, let's look in the mirror and see a society that could be headed for something far worse even than moral ambiguity. Tomorrow we're going to talk about Christianity. Are Christians just getting a little too thin-skinned, or is there a war on Christmas? We'll be back to talk about it tomorrow on the Albert Mueller Program.
Thanks for listening, and be sure to visit our website, www.albertmuller.com. You'll find archives of past shows and other important resources. You can also email your questions and comments. That's www.albertmuller.com. Be sure to join us next time for the Albert Mueller Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter.